Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
There are any number of reasons you might consider selling your home. To move closer to family, live within a smaller budget, or just wanting a change of scenery. Whatever your reasons, having to figure out all the various housing market trends in your area may not be what you signed up for. That's where an agent who is a Realtor comes in. Realtors have the expertise to help you find the right price and navigate the process to sell your home in a way that's right for you. That's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Welcome back to Significant Others. I'm Liza Powell O'Brien. In yesterday's episode, we learned about the profound friendship between James Baldwin and Maya Angelou. Today, I'm so excited to welcome comedian, best-selling author, and host of the Emmy Award-winning CNN series United Shades of America, W. Kamau Bell, to talk a little bit more about the impact of these artists and the importance of affinity groups. Kamau, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So this episode that we are discussing details many things, but primarily the relationship between Maya Angelou and James Baldwin. So I was wondering if you might talk a little bit about how you see the impact that Maya Angelou had on American culture, on pop culture in general.
It's funny, when I first think of Maya Angelou, it becomes like there's, you know, there's famous people, there's icons, and then there's people who are like sort of this like holders of the culture, which is sort of bigger than all those other things. Like, you know, you can be Michael Jordan, you can be Oprah Winfrey, and then there's the people that like Oprah's like, no, over here, this person holds
the
culture.
She's the person who unlocked Oprah.
Yeah. So I think that, and happy in her lifetime, because this has not always happened for people who hold the culture, specifically Black women, that she got to see it and be a part of it.
Yes.
I don't think that, you know, there's, I think about like somebody like Nina Simone, who I think also has is sort of underrated in how much of the culture she was holding for us, and didn't really, even though she died old, I don't think she really got to feel it in the way that like Maya Angelou got to be sort of brought around the world, shown as like, this is somebody who holds a culture. So I think it's like just the impact. I can think about my mom. So my mom went to Stanford to get a PhD in African-American literature. And this is the late 60s, early 70s. And they said that wasn't a real thing.
So what did she do?
She dropped out, and people still call her, think she has a PhD, and she does not. But she
certainly has
the knowledge. She still has the certificate. And so Maya Angelou is one of the people who sort of loudly said, this is a field. This is a thing that Black people engage in and that we do. She's one of the people that you can point to and say she kicked the door open. So yeah, I think that I never got to meet her. Like, I never didn't know her, but certainly feel like, you know, there's these, again, people who hold the culture, and she's one of those people.
And then the story, as I understand it, we can't know obviously whether or not she would have ultimately written her memoir without, you know, having this interaction and this friendship with James Baldwin, but this moment of him granting her access to the world that could enable her to make this change in culture, to me, feels so precious and so specific in terms of it being this friendship-based connection. Mm-hmm. And almost a little ironic as I listen to you talking about her position in the culture, because as a writer, I consider him a foremost American writer, and I don't know that he had a similar emotional impact at the scale that she did, because maybe because he wasn't the first, maybe he was the second or the third person.
I don't know. I think Maya, really, we can't underestimate the sort of the Oprah effect on how she sits in the culture. And I think that if James Baldwin had been around for that, I would imagine that he would have had his run on that too. You know, like, I think that he, and I think the way that most people take in James Baldwin now, which I think is actually kind of awesome, is YouTube clips of him giving speeches and him debating people. And I think there's something great about that, because you can read the text and have one idea of the person, but really seeing him like actually do the work that you feel like, wait, is this from today? Like,
I had so many of those moments when I was doing the research for this episode and reading what he was writing in the thick of the civil rights explosion, and thinking, you know, it's the frustrating feeling of how many times we have to relearn the same lessons. You know, he was saying all the stuff that we need to be hearing and remembering and saying to ourselves now, and saying it so beautifully. Well, that's great that he's having his reverberations.
No, he's one of those, it's funny, one of those people who, like, who would imagine would reverberate through like Instagram videos and TikTok videos, you know, like, but it's, and that's when I go, sometimes it's easy to condescend to social media. It's easy to point out the problems with social media, but that is something that I think it does really well, is like recontextualizing things that you might've thought were boring if they didn't come through this format.
Mm-hmm. I feel he would have appreciated that.
No, I think, I think he would have. I would imagine he would also have said, and what's my percentage of that? What do I get on that?
Well, that's not a bad question. This connection that they had, which I just hadn't known about before, I happened to read an article that mentioned this sort of conversation, this dinner that he had with Jules Feiffer and his wife, and he brought Maya Angelou, and because she was feeling sad, and you know, and then she told her stories, and the first time she had told her stories, and they all loved it. And then they called their friend, the editor, and it was this kind of crazy little domino effect thing. But it made me think of the phrase, and I don't know how prevalent this phrase is, or if it's just in the sort of work that I've been doing, but this idea of affinity spaces. And I don't know if that's something that you think about. No,
they literally have them at my daughter's schools, like, you know, the affinity spaces. So there's like the... For black people who identify as girls, basically is what I think how they put it. So there's like, there's all these different affinity spaces at their schools where they can participate in being around their self-defined kind. So
our son is in high school, and they had a day where they did some of those types of workshops. And he was sort of like, well, there really isn't a space for me, which is, because he's the one everyone's defining themselves against. That's right. And he acknowledges that. And he's like, it's totally fine. I just literally don't know where to stand, you know?
Mm-hmm. I would say stand in your discomfort. I think that's the best thing you can do. And I think the more you understand it, like, oh, this is one of the, and I don't know your son, but I'm saying if we're talking about like racially and identities that are more marginalized and oppressed, and he's not one of those identities, then now you get to sort of see a little piece of what it is to stand in the discomfort of like, there's no space for me. And I would say, soak it up. And so therefore, the next time somebody who is like, not you, tells you about their experience, you can maybe relate better, just to go, oh, okay, I have seen a piece of that, you know?
And you have a new book out, Do the Work, an Anti-Racist Activity Book.
That book came out of, really out of 2020 and the racial reckoning of George Floyd and the murder of George Floyd by the people. That book was like basically me and Kate, who wrote it, were sitting in my office watching like January 6th happen while we were writing this book on how to create an anti-racist society. And then before that, in the few years before that, I wrote my first book called The Awkward Thoughts of W. Kamau Bell, which is more of a memoir. I really related to Maya Angelou saying, like, I'm only 40. Like, you know, like, I can't.
Right?
I really, when I wrote my book, I was like, this seems sort of ridiculous. But I really sort of, at the time, thought, I really thought about her. She wrote seven autobiographies. And like, I get, like, yeah, this is just the one I'm writing now. This is probably, you know, then maybe I'll write seven more, or maybe I'll never write one again. But it's not that serious.
I wonder with her how much coming from the place of needing to explain an experience of America, you know, to your earlier point, that had not been explained in a, you know, sort of widely appealing memoir form before, if that was part of the heaviness of the lift of that, and maybe why she was like, okay, I'm good with just this first chunk. Like, that's enough just to get her to her 20s. That was enough for an entire book.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you had any of those.
I mean, I would imagine that, I mean, first of all, as you learn, is like, she had to get over the idea that there wasn't a book in her.
Right.
Because I think you think about being a black woman who's growing up, black girl in America, you're not being told that your words are important, even necessarily in your community. And there's certainly not a lot of role models out there of like black women. Like, there's not a lot of black women who've written books. And so that you're aware of, because they exist, but your educational system is probably not bringing them to you. Mm-hmm. And so the idea that you have to first get over the fact that your words are worth something, and then you got to do it. And I think the thing that Maya clearly had was like, she was a doer. Like, if you look at her biography, like, you know, just the fact that, like, to have moved that many times, to have had that many different, I'm a dancer, I'm a singer, I'm a poet, like, you know.
First black female streetcar conductor in San Francisco at age
16, 50, I think it was.
Yeah, something like that. Crazy.
So clearly that's the key factor there, is that she's somebody who, like, I do things mm-hmm. and I'm not afraid of doing new things. So, and as you see, it's like the challenge of doing it is what actually maybe made her do it. Like, oh, I can't do it. Okay. Now I'm going to show you.
Absolutely.
Which I think some people's brains work that way. Like, if you want to get me to do something, say I can't do it.
That's so, right.
For me, it's just that thing about, like, that's the secret sauce of her, is that I am a doer. She's not somebody who marinates. So then probably once she starts writing the book, I would imagine once it started, it was like, yeah. it was a torrent.
Turns out there's a lot to say.
Yeah.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World? Like, hey, we came to play. Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
So I don't know if you do this, but I catch myself all the time sort of endlessly scrolling through cooking accounts on social media thinking, oh, I could make that. I could make that. That looks delicious and easy. I could totally make that. And then I don't. I just never seem to take that next step and go make those things and eat them. So now I have a new favorite thing to do, which is to scroll through the Factor website, because they have all these photos of this gorgeous, healthy, fresh food that I always want to eat. And then instead of going to the store and shopping for ingredients and prepping and cooking, all I have to do is wait for it to show up at my house. That's how easy it is. The folks at Factor were kind enough to send us some to try, and I'm so glad they did because it really is terrific. Head to factormeals.com/significant50 and use code significant50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code significant50 at factormeals.com/significant50. 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
There are any number of reasons you might consider selling your home. To move closer to family, live within a smaller budget, or just wanting a change of scenery. Whatever your reasons, having to figure out all the various housing market trends in your area may not be what you signed up for. That's where an agent who is a Realtor comes in. Realtors have the expertise to help you find the right price and navigate the process to sell your home in a way that's right for you. That's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
So did you have anyone in your life or any number of people who functioned for you in this way, similarly to what James Baldwin offered Maya Angelou in terms of just fellowship or access or anything that kind of set you on a certain trajectory?
Oh, for sure. For sure. I mean, there's sort of like multiple different people for different reasons. One of the great things about James Baldwin's stories is that it's very clear. Like, we think of these sort of like heroes from the past as almost being separate from their timeline. Like, you sort of read their story. And in James Baldwin's story, you can see like, no, he actually was around Malcolm and Martin. And like, he was actually friends with so you get to see like, there's all these people that the famous ones we know about that are connected to these people. But then there's all the people I'm sure whose names that we don't know that aren't famous who are also doing that same work. So for me, it's like, I can think of people, you know, one of my oldest friends is a guy named Dwayne Kennedy, who I met when I was 21 years old doing stand-up comedy. Mm-hmm. And he's a stand-up comedian. And, you know, at the time he was like the older cat on the scene who, like, everybody was like, that guy's a legend. He's the legend of the scene. And for some reason he like, allowed me to hang out with him. Actually, a friend of mine sort of set me up. My friend Jason was like, come out and he's hanging out with that guy. And so he initiated conversation with Dwayne and sort of was a bridge to friendship. And me and Dwayne have like, and you know, it took me for a while to break through my career. And as soon as I did, I started like, basically like, I can keep him in my life if I give him a job. Like, so like, every major project I've had, he works on United Shades. He worked on my Netflix special. And when people ask him, what is your job? Like, what do you do for Kamau? I don't know if you've seen The Sopranos.
Yes.
So Dwayne will make fun of me because I have not seen every episode of The Sopranos.
And oh
so
boy,
I,
how dare yeah, you?
I know. There's a lot of, I was going to do it and then more TV kept coming out. I've seen some, but I've not, I can't. But he says that he's the goat that is the friend of the horse in The Sopranos. he's Pyle Mai's goat.
The so emotional like, support goat.
That you can't really tell exactly what that person is doing, but it's clear if that person's not there, things don't go well. So
exactly
and,
right.
And I'm luckily at the point I don't have to explain to anybody. I'm just like, Dwayne's gonna come, he'll be here, and it just happens. So yeah. So but then I look at like a friend of mine who I met when I moved out to the Bay, like I guess I met her in 2003. This woman named Martha Reinberg, who was not in this business. I was teaching a solo performance class, like how to do solo performance, and she was a student. And very quickly it was just very clear to me that like just the way that like she was my student, but she was making fun of me in front of other students. Like, you're like, hey, wait a minute. And these are all adults. Let me clear. It's all we're all adults taking this class. But she just sort of respected what I had to say, but didn't just respect me full out all the time. And so then we were both only, I think we bonded because we're both only children. And there's a way in which only children understand the world. Mm. Even though she was a white lesbian and I was a black heterosexual male, it was like, but we sort of had this only child thing that I think people don't really underestimate.
That's fascinating.
Yeah,
it's a whole other conversation.
It's a whole other. I often tell people, like, separate from racism, my identifier would be only child, but racism does not let me platform that identity. So yeah,
I wonder if that's ever an affinity group option.
I've never seen that, but I think that if you got a room full of only children together, they'd be like, oh yeah, okay, I think there's definitely affinity there.
Yeah.
But yeah, Martha ended up becoming somebody who became like a fast friend and then a collaborator. And then my student ended up directing the solo show that got me my career started. She directed it, even though she came to me as a student.
Wow.
And there's somebody who like said that to me one time, the thing that I will always quote her for is like, I was doing this solo show about ending racism. And she's like, you know, you can't end racism and make sexism worse at the same time. And I was like, what? But I'm not a sexist. I don't do sex. And she sort of explained to me, like, if by comparing yourself to the worst examples of sexism, you're not, that doesn't clear you of your own sexism. Mm. And so she sort of sat me down and we spent a lot of time and went through like things she had seen in my act, not necessarily my life, my act, how it didn't reflect me well, how I was doing things because I thought they were the way that I should do them is because that's how comedy works.
Sure.
And not actually doing things that reflected who she knew I was. So Martha is somebody who I absolutely like, is somebody that like has that level of like, that sort of level that like I see between Baldwin and Maya, where it's like, they can sort of get to you very quickly and correct your path. And also you'll have the most fun time you ever have with two people with that person.
I also think for them, there was that shorthand that you get when you share any kind of lived experience with someone, but then also the relief of the absence of a sexual connection. Like sometimes that can be, that can be a burden too.
I think that is true of my friendship with Dwayne and my friendship with Martha. There's never been a sense of like, there's no will they, won't they. there's no like,
oh my God.
And I will say this, that I actually recognize like as a heterosexual man in the world, I realized at one point when I was in college, I was like, I don't have any friends who are women. Because I think all of my sort of energy for women was around like sexual feelings. Mm-hmm. And even if I didn't have sexual feelings, there was always some sort of like level like, well, I wouldn't. So this person's not worth my time, you know.
Right.
And when I realized that, I was like, that's a problem. And I think that like you can't make people be your friends, but you can certainly figure out how to be a more interesting, open, kinder, of more available to friendship person than I had been up until that point.
Did that idea just pop into your head or did someone point that out to you? Because that's kind of remarkable for a 20-something man, you know, to...
Again, it's almost like what Martha said to me. How come I'm not... I can't... Clearly, I'm a friendly person, but somehow something's getting in the way. So it was something that, like I really noticed as a deficit in my life. And then... And it wasn't, I don't think, until I moved to the Bay Area in 97 where... And, you know, you can't create friends out of whole cloth, but, like, you just sort of... If you put yourself in different scenarios in different places, I think this is the big thing. you're not afraid to go to the place. If you're invited to the thing and you go, oh, that seems weird, but you go anyway, or the more open you are to being. And this is, I mean, this is, I think the whole, like, you know, Baldwin going to France, like, you know, or Maya going to, like, this is the idea of like, huh, like, it's only available to you if you take up the opportunity. So I think the idea being that so many, I would imagine that so many Black people at that point in the history of this country could not imagine getting on a plane and going to another country.
It's shocking what he did. And I mean, he did follow Richard Wright. Mm-hmm. You know, Richard Wright had gone a couple years before. So that helped a little bit ideologically, I would think. And there was that sort of community of writers there. It was very much the place to be as a writer. He had not a dime to his name. Mm-hmm. And what, you know, he was running almost away from America and Harlem in particular, as much as he was running toward anything. But it's amazing what he did.
I think even at that point, there's sort of a Black narrative of like, they don't hate us in France. Like I think about Josephine Baker, about like Josephine Baker did a similar thing. And Nina Simone actually at one point left the country. And there's sort of a, whether the truth of it is the same, but there's a sense of like, we can get away from America there.
Yeah, well, and he said in Europe, Americans are all American. Mm-hmm, and that was one of his revelations, right, is that we are all American. And, you know, it's hard to create affinity without noticing a division, right? That's part of what creates the affinity. And then, and Maya Angelou was thinking, everyone was telling her, oh, it's so great over here for Black people. And she thought, okay, fine, and almost moved her son. And then had that experience with her African friends where she saw the absolute, you know, hideous way they were treated by the French. So she realized, no place is really safe from this. But she has that great line where she says, even just crossing into the border of Canada, she said, I have the burden of not looking at white people for the first time because I'm not, I'm just not worrying about them.
No, I mean, I was a person who in the midst of the 2020 part of the pandemic was like, and also pandemic and George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and racial reckoning. And I would just be like, where is there a place I can go where I could escape just for a little bit, just to sort of like not be caught up in the, spend a lot of time looking at New Zealand, because you really quickly find out that there's not really any place you can go as a Black American and escape America and also feel like you're not alone. Like I would be like, if you look at lists, the best place to live on the planet is Norway. So now I'm going to be the Black guy in Norway. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's not...
Well, you'll be the Black American in Norway.
The Black American in Norway.
Yeah, doubly damning. I don't know. Yeah, is that war? Like,
and
which ones?
I'm sure there's a few, but it's not like... I don't want to go someplace and feel... you know, one of the things I want to escape in America is being conspicuous everywhere I go as a Black American. Mm-hmm. If I do that, I'm not escaping. I can't just blend in. I can't just relax. And then you say, there's places in Africa you can go. And there's also sort of like this idea of like, I'm still a Black American. Like is there any place you can sort of go and just sort of be and breathe, you know? And so that's I still haven't answered that question yet. And I haven't really traveled enough internationally to be able to say that, but that was something that really stuck in my head and sort of thinking about Baldwin, Josephine Baker, Nina Simone, people who did, specifically artists who left, because it was almost like they needed a place to breathe so they could do art.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you know what you're working on next? Do you know your next project? You do so many things all the time. Do you have a next project?
I mean, I'm always sort of like, I always feel like it's like one of those giant like stoves where there's like 15 burners and there's always like things I'm like sort of like hoping to do. I mean, right now I'm like, I'm on the book tour for the Do the Work, the anti-racism workbook, and United Shades is out right now. So that's currently where all my, I think that's it right now. That's where all my energy is.
Oh, that's all.
Yeah, that's all. That's just the TV show and a book.
and a book.
You know, when you sort of, you know, show business, you're sort of an independent contractor a lot of times. And so like, and also again, as an only child, I'm just used to sort of following my nose into wherever I want to go because I didn't have eight sisters and brothers going, no, we all have to go here. So I just think I'm always going to be sort of like following my nose, I guess.
Thank you so much for doing this with us.
Thank you.
And I hope to speak with you again sometime soon.
No, this is fun. Thank you.
Be sure to check out Kamau's new book, Do the Work, an Anti-Racist Activity Book, out now. Join us next time on Significant Others to hear about a woman who, among other things, got Marlon Brando a shrink. And finally, if you enjoyed what you heard today, be sure to rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.
There are any number of reasons you might consider selling your home. To move closer to family, live within a smaller budget, or just wanting a change of scenery. Whatever your reasons, having to figure out all the various housing market trends in your area may not be what you signed up for. That's where an agent who is a Realtor comes in. Realtors have the expertise to help you find the right price and navigate the process to sell your home in a way that's right for you. That's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at the coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.